Welcome to Voices of the Valley, a captivating podcast series that brings together some of the brightest minds in the agriculture industry. Straight from the field to your living room, we explore the challenges, innovation, and triumphs in modern-day farming and provide insight for consumers who are curious about where their food comes from. Welcome to this week's Voices of the Valley. I'm your host, Corey Lundy. In this week's episode, we join Western growers Michelle Rivera and Kara Timmons as they chat with special guest Stuart Wolf, President and CEO of Wolf Farming and Processing and Chair of the Western Growers Board of Directors, to talk about some common misconceptions and share a few interesting facts about almonds. Almonds have been cultivated for thousands of years. And did you know, California is the largest producer of almonds globally, accounting for more than 80% of the world's almond supply. But given their popularity, almonds have been the subject of scrutiny in recent years, which has led to the spread of misinformation online and through social media. We asked Stuart to shed some light on common questions consumers may have about almonds. Do almonds really use a lot of water? Are almonds environmentally friendly? Is almond farming harmful to bees? By the end of this podcast, we hope to clear up any misconceptions you may have about almonds. So stick with us, and we know you'll develop an even deeper appreciation for almonds and the dedicated farmers who grow them.
Hello, everyone. My name is Michelle Rivera with Western Growers.
My name is Kara Timmons with Western Growers.
And we're here today with our guest, Stuart Wolf, President and CEO of Wolf Farming and Processing. Stuart is also the recently elected chair of the Western Growers Board of Directors. Welcome, Stuart. Glad to have you with us this week.
Thank you. It's great being here.
So let's give our listeners a little background about you and Wolf Farming and Processing.
The company was started by my father and mother in 1974. And I think one thing that's kind of interesting, Dad was 57 and kind of put everything on the table to buy a couple thousand acres in western Fresno County. And we started Wolf Farming Company, and it's grown from that point. And now we grow a handful of crops that where California, we think, has competitive global advantage. Like, this is the best place in the world to grow them. These are also crops where we enjoy our best return per acre foot of water, and water's our limiting factor here. So we run like all of our budgets against how much do we earn per acre foot of water, as opposed to like invested capital, if you will. Turns out all these crops are nutritionally dense, and typically they're all like mechanically harvested, and so they don't have a heavy labor burden associated with them. My dad early on kind of got the crop mix right, and then invested in some processing facilities where we process some of these crops that we grow. So we're in the tomato processing business. We produce a lot of tomato paste, and we're in the almond processing business. And believe it or not, we're producing some almond paste there that goes into almond milk.
And now, well, in this podcast episode, we are going to be covering a Mythbusters Almonds edition, and we're going to be going over some misconceptions we've all heard about the industry and almonds. This topic was discussed recently by Governor Newsom and Bill Maher. Myth number one, almond trees require excessive amounts of water.
Well, let me first start by saying I happen to really like Bill Maher. Mm-hmm. I think he's hilarious. I think he's super smart, and there's a number of things that I've actually listened to in my car, like when he's talking about universities and how screwed up they are and everything. But I think on this deal, I think he just got some numbers kind of mixed up, and it came out, and it was, you know, he just got it mixed up. And specifically with the governor, he was asking the governor what he's going to do about almonds, which to me is just kind of a funny question to begin with. But he essentially said that a pound of almonds requires about 1,900 gallons. And if you do the math and you look at the average yield of almonds in the state, it's about 2,500 pounds. Plus, it's a little bit less than, but just say it's 2,500 pounds. And if you multiply 2,500 pounds by the gallons of water, it equates to about 14 to 15 acre feet of water. So that would be, if you just visualize an orchard, the water consumption and use that he's talking about would be 14 feet high on that field. And I would submit to you that if you put that much water on any crop in California, you would kill it. Okay, he just got the, you know, God love him, you know, he's got so much stuff going on in his head, but that he just got wrong. The number really for most almond growers is closer to about 3.5 to 4 acre feet per acre. So it's close to that number, that metric that some folks years ago at Mother Jones, they wrote an article and they said an almond takes about a gallon of water. That's actually, if you took all the water applied and just put it on the pounds of almonds, you would come up with a number closer to that.
So you have a lot of ways to conserve water. What are you doing in your operations that are allowing you to do that?
Well, what we're doing, and it's what most growers in California are doing, you know, all of California agriculture, most all of it, there are some areas where there's a little better access and reliability on water, but most areas of California are water deficient. And so this is our limiting resource. So like any limited resource, you got to really manage it well. And so if you look at like I think it's something like 85% and more, or slightly more than 85% of all almond growers use either micro irrigation and water scheduling and whatever. Water is actually not only a scarce resource, but everybody thinks it's cheap for agriculture. It's one of our most expensive inputs. But I want to go back to just the general perception about almonds and water, because there's no doubt this crop has been so successful in California that over the course of time, growers have planted about 1.5 million acres of almonds. And I want to point that out because when I came to California back from business school and everything and to farm, in those years, there was about 1.2 million acres of cotton grown in the state. And cotton was always talked about how much water cotton uses. And it was true, if you take the amount of water times the acres, it's a big number. But if you look at it on a per acre basis, you know, it's quite a different story. So, you know, we grow a lot of row crops like onion and garlic and processing tomatoes and what have you. And most row crops use about, you know, 2 3/4 acre foot to 3 acre feet per acre to grow a crop. And almonds use about 3.5 to 4. So let's just say they're using about 25% more water than a row crop. So there's no doubt you have a lot of acres and they are using a bit more, but it's not a crazy amount more than row crops. And you think about it intuitively, a plant the size of a tree is going to use more water than the plant the size of a little shrub or, you know, what have you. For me, the real question is the water being used efficiently? And the other question is, you know, is that gallon per nut really the right number? And I would argue it's really not. An almond tree produces more than an almond. An almond tree produces annually almond hulls, almond shell, and an almond meat. And the almond meat represents about 30% of the total weight that comes off of that tree. So the big end of the cow there are almond hulls. And almonds, if you think of an almond is nothing more than kind of a peach pit, where the almond doesn't flesh out and form a peach. It has a hull, and the hull has sugar in it. And it's a terrific feed source for dairy animals. So in the state of California, if we have a 3 billion pound crop of almond meats, that means we're producing about 3 million tons of hull. And all that hull goes to dairies and what have you. So to try to get your head wrapped around, you know, well, what does that even mean? You know, 3 million tons of hull. If you replace 3 million tons of hull with just alfalfa that cows also eat, and cows have to eat a bunch of different things, but if you compare that to something like alfalfa, those hulls would replace about 250,000 to 300,000 acres of alfalfa that you no longer have to grow because you can feed these hulls. And that alfalfa by itself would use somewhere in the neighborhood of about 1.5 million acre feet of water. Or to think of it in different terms, just if you think about 1 acre of almonds, the hulls are replacing about 1 acre foot of feed that would have been grown otherwise on different lands. So, you know, this whole thing about a gallon per nut, you know, it's a real easy metric to glom onto, you know. And I had the chance to meet the author of the Mother Jones article where he threw this out. And I was at a luncheon and he was sitting next to me, a guy named, I think his name is Bill Pott, his last name. And it was funny because we were side by side and I'm like, well, what do you do? Well, I write for Mother Jones. And anyway, it came out he was the guy with the metric. And I said, well, I'm an almond grower. And he's like, oh, for God's sakes. Okay. to me, this is such an interesting kind of story about social media and how information gets passed around and everything. Because he said, look, I've gone out to California. The Almond Board had me go look at all these other products that are generated and everything. And I get it, you know, but it's a metric where I'm taking all the water used by the tree and I'm putting it on just one thing, the nut. And I thought it was an easy metric. And he says, you know, the next thing I know, it's just kind of getting reported over and over again. And then, you know, other non-dairy milks and everything, you know, if you're making like an oat milk or you're, you know, the first thing you do is say, well, it requires a lot less water than almonds. And you quote the gallon per nut, and it just took on a life of its own. And actually, I think when you really break all this stuff down, almonds have like an incredible, like environmental positive story to tell. And it's just lost in this whole thing about they use too much water.
Yeah, that was my question about how, you know, the feed of the cattle feeds into, you know, the greater story of environmental changes that are currently happening. And do you have any other examples alongside the supplementing cattle diets that it is counterintuitive to say that almonds are not environmentally friendly? Do we have any good examples of how they're good for the environment, how we're using them?
Well, you know, one thing that I was struck with years ago when Arnold Schwarzenegger was governor and he was proposing this greenhouse gas bill, where AB 32, where we would then create carbon markets in California. And in that law, when they were putting it together, they were talking about there was a way for industry, agriculture, regular, you know, whatever, could develop credits if they did certain things and they changed their practices and they, you know, whatever. But I thought what was noteworthy and something that I got really excited about, there was discussion about, you know, you could actually plant trees throughout the state and generate carbon credits. I mean, I was thrilled. You know, we were growing our almond business. We were going to be planting more trees. You know, you think about 1.5 million acres of almonds. It's like a forest out there. But what happened was they modified that language because they realized, wait, all these growers are planting walnuts and pistachios and almonds, and we're not going to give them any credit if they're actually growing something towards a commercial ends. You know, I get that. So they only gave credit for planting trees for urban forests, and they limited like how much you could do. So they didn't, you know, which seems crazy to me, you know, like why wouldn't you encourage more trees than just capping them? But anyway, long and short of it is these are trees. And, you know, I think most people know that trees are pretty good things for sequestering carbon, and it's a carbon sink. You know, honestly, it's kind of like a forest where you go in and you harvest crop every year. And so you think about an almond tree that goes in the ground and it will stay in the ground for 20 to 25 years. One thing that a lot of environmentalists are kind of uptight about is the tillage farmers do. Because when you till soil, it releases carbon into the atmosphere and all this. You know, when you plant an orchard, you quit tilling the ground for 20 to 25 years. In our own case, and a lot of our neighbors are doing the same, what we're now doing, we're taking on more regenerative ag practices where we're planting cover crops down the center of those rows. It attracts bees. It's good for the soil. You know, when you get rainfall, the ground actually absorbs more water. You know, you're getting more natural rainfall to the roots. And so I look at these orchards as being, you know, really vastly better kind of for the environment, at least from a farmer's perspective, where I'm not running equipment out in the tomato field every year and remaking the beds and doing this, that, or the other thing. For me, it's a super cool kind of environmental thing. And it's something we do better than anybody else in the world. That's why we represent 85% of global production. It's California. So,
well, that actually leads me into our other myth here, that almonds are not environmentally friendly or sustainable.
Well, I would disagree with that wholeheartedly. You know, I do find most of my friends that are not farmers that get a lot of their information online and everything and, you know, question this. And, you know, I think we live in a society where, like, if you're a grower and you're defending your practices, well, how can you believe them, you know? And so I'm just offering insights from my own experience where I know the things that we're doing in our orchards are really, I think, really cool. Like right now, just for example, with all of our cover cropping efforts and everything, we're not out there mowing these fields. And, you know, we have sheep out there. And we have, you know, we're rotating livestock basically through these things that are feeding, you know, off of, you know, the stuff that's growing in the centers of the field that's improving the soils. And it's a thing you got to manage and manage well. But, you know, my goal ultimately is to end up at the end of the day transferring these lands to the next generation with healthier soils and bigger and better shape than it was received. And I think that's not unique to me, you know. I mean, I have that vision to do it, but I'm basically taking on a lot of the same practices of all my neighbors.
And then earlier you mentioned bees. And one of the myths on almonds is that it's bad for the bees. So yeah. Can we talk a little bit about the bees?
Well, yeah, sure. You know, bees. You know, I think one thing about bees that, and almonds in particular, that for me is kind of noteworthy is like this past year, there's a group made up of various bee groups that are interested in bee health and bee prosperity. And it's the North American Pollen Air Protection Campaign. And they choose people who, you know, have stepped up and have done a lot to protect and, you know, kind of lead the way and kind of relative to pollinator health. And they're doing things like, you know, cover crops and planting, you know, flowering cover crops in their orchards, and they're creating habitat around their properties for native bee health and everything. And I just think it's telling that for those that are concerned about almond growers in particular, an almond grower actually got the award.
Which almond grower?
Well, I got the award. and I'm very honored to get it because we're very focused on this. I'm not the only one doing these activities. There's a number of people that are. We've been kind of instrumental in encouraging other growers to do it because we have customers at our almond processing facility that want these practices. And so we've encouraged our growers, our suppliers, and we pay them incentives to do it. And so anyway, we were very honored to receive that recognition. And behind water, I would say bees are one of our most expensive things that we do out in an almond orchard. So every year you got to rent hives that come out, and these trees need to be cross-pollinated. So, you know, you've got these varieties that need to cross-pollinate to set the crop. So the bees do their business out there. And, you know, it's not uncommon to rent a hive for about $200 an acre, and you'll put like 2 to 2.5 hives out in an orchard. So for a typical grower, he's got $400 to $500 invested to rent bees that will be there for about 6 weeks, okay? So you think about it, you know, it's pretty expensive. Now, I can't speak for every grower out there, but any grower that chooses to spray when the bees are out or chooses to put a material on that would possibly harm the bees isn't very smart. I would just say you don't spend a bunch of money to then, you know, kill the bees. You're far better off actually creating a habitat that the bees love and thrive in. So this is why you're seeing a lot more growers throughout the area planting cover crops that are all flowering, because you want your bees attracted to your orchard. And believe it or not, you know, with the billions and billions of flowers on the trees, you know, they even like it better when there's more flowers. And so, you know, nobody purposely goes out and harms their bees. It's just illogical. You know, are there guys that they see the rain coming and they have to choose between putting a fungicide out or a material and they've got to make a tough call? You know, they're definitely those growers. But at the end of the day, any material you use in California, you have to get a conditional use permit. You actually have to apply to the county ag guy to say, you know, I've got, you know, I want to put a fungicide out. Here's my timing. They come back and they'll tell you how to use it, when to use it, all this kind of stuff. We have the toughest regulatory regime for any materials in California. So I don't know, whenever I read or I hear from one of my urban friends, hey, you guys, you know, you just don't know how to manage those things, you know, and you're harming the bees and the bees are threatened and this, that, and the other thing. You know, there's just so much more to that story. And I don't think anybody even appreciates it's counterproductive to not provide a good environment for your bees.
And this just ties into another myth that we often hear, pesticides is such a charged word right now.
Yeah.
With a lot of people, especially on social media, a lot of misconceptions going around. And then we have here the myth that all almonds are treated with harmful pesticides.
Yeah, you know, some of these, they're just, I don't know, myth's the right word as opposed to just...
Misconception, whatever.
You know, most growers out there, most conventional agriculture do use synthetic materials and what have you. You know, the reason all these were developed is because we do have issues with all kinds of pests and fungi and bacteria and what have you. And so actually, you know, we're probably almost victims of our own success to some degree. I think there was a period of time in the States where, you know, chemical companies would develop these products and you just assumed, you know, like in the 60s, 70s, that, you know, well, if this much is good, more's got to be better. You know, through the years, we have lost access to so many of the materials that we use to fight disease and pests and what have you. We're really down to kind of a small scope of them. And you've got to get a conditional use permit, as I said before. So the idea that, again, growers are out willy-nilly, the chemical guy told me to use them, and I just don't know any better. You know, the most skeptical person of, you know, that for me is any salesman, you know, and what they're trying to sell. But, you know, through the years of farming and learning and, you know, when to apply materials and what materials are working and what aren't, you know, this is another cost item for us that we try to get by using as little as possible. And, you know, maybe it makes all consumers feel better that we keep losing these materials as time goes by. And that's actually one of my great fears, is that we will ultimately take away the tools that farmers have to do this, where we will end up giving up some of our global competitive advantage. And I'm talking about people that use these materials well and appropriately, you know, but they can be hugely valuable.
You said something about the global market. What kind of influence does California produce have on the global market? How much are we exporting? How much is being consumed in the United States?
Yeah, you know, I don't have those numbers off the top of my head, but, you know, I think generally California gross farm revenue is $55 billion or something like that. And you think about that. So California in total is about 100 million acres. And we irrigate and farm about 8.5 million. And on that 8.5 million, we have this bounty where we supply, you know, all the nuts, fruits, vegetables, and all this kind of stuff. What's so interesting to me, you look at like the 300, 350 different crops that are grown in California. Most all of those, we kind of lead the globally in terms of yield, quality, production, you know. And, you know, I'd like to say, well, it's because of just how good the farmers are here. I'm a farmer. Truth be told, you know, we're in the perfect latitudes. And we have the Sierra Nevadas and the coastal range, and their drainage into the Central Valley has left us with some of the best soils you can find throughout the world, you know. So you couple that with the latitudes and then those mountain ranges, and given the weather patterns we have here, for much of the year, you know, we get an entrapped air basin throughout the valley of Central Valley of California. It's like a gigantic greenhouse. We've plumbed it. We have the State Water Project, the Federal Water Project. So, you know, we grow this broad, wide diversity of crops here. And most of the specialty crops that we grow in California are exactly the crops that any nutritionist or doctor would tell you eat more of. And I'll tell you what, I like a good steak and a burger like anybody, but I really like pistachios, almonds, processing tomatoes, onion, garlic, artichokes, avocado. I like it all. And, you know, if you're the best at what you do, you tend to share it with others. And so exports out of California, it's a great thing. And again, I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but the exports out of California are significant, you know, from an agricultural standpoint. And, you know, you think about it, let's go back to almonds. We grow about 85% of global production. You know, the reason we are is because we outproduce every other region in the world. And if you're going to grow them and you're going to sell them, whoever does that at a lower cost point and can out-yield and produce and enjoy a long season to run your plants in, you know, you're going to own that. The challenge we have in California, as the state reduces the amount of water that growers can rely on, And as we reduce the number of materials that we have, and as we're increasing the labor rates and reducing the availability, we're carving away all of our competitive advantages. And so now I have friends, I've made a personal investment, I've invested in Portugal, you know, to grow almonds. I have friends that are investing, you know, in South America and, you know, all over the place. And I think the state of California, with its regulations and its policies, are encouraging their best growers to go elsewhere for growth. You know, is that a great thing? I don't know. But, you know, I just think we could manage our resources here better.
What can a consumer do to learn more about the process of what's happening with water in California?
You know, honestly, I think the water thing in California is so complex. There's so many moving parts. I think it's a tough thing for somebody to gravitate to and try to really dig into, unless you're like a water user and, you know, you're forced to like get involved with it. I think it's far easier for people to listen to somebody with a website that has a bunch of followers, an opinion leader that's going to espouse, you know, avoid almonds. You know, it's a gallon per nut. I think that's a lot easier. You don't have to think about it anymore, right? If you actually go in, you start delving into water policy in California and agriculture and the environment, and it is such a convoluted, mixed up mess. I mean, and I live it, but I hate, you know, spending time with it. I mean, actually, on a more positive note, you know, I've almost, I don't want to say I've given up the fight or whatever in trying to secure more reliable water, but I've kind of come to the conclusion, like, for our family and our legacy of land, I've got to figure out ways to just simply, I can't count on the state to do logical things with the water that comes out of the sky every year. And it's too complicated. I don't think we have the leadership that appreciates the benefit of it and what have you. So, you know, I'm trying to figure out, how do I utilize my land to align more with some of these initiatives that the state is going to pursue, whether it's renewable energy. So maybe there's more solar on our property. It doesn't require any water. I'll do some solar. It kills me to cover up some of the most productive and diverse land in the world so we can put panels on it. I mean, my father, I'm sure, is rolling over in his grave. But, and then I think, well, you know, I'm in an area where we can actually bank water within our water district, our ground service area, our GSA. So we've established a number of banks. So in wet years, we can actually put water in the ground, and we don't have enough banking capacity in our area. So it, to me, it's a valuable asset, but we're not farming. We're using it to put water in the ground. You know, we're doing a lot more cover cropping as part of our rotation. We don't make money cover cropping, but I think over the course of time, I'm improving the soil. And if it doesn't rain, you know, I just cut the water on the cover crops. You know, that's that. And then, you know, I'm looking at drought tolerant crops like agave to maybe vertically integrate and process agaves either into fiber, sugar, or distilled spirits. And the agave uses a lot less water than any row crop. So, you know, and ultimately, I think our next generation, I encourage them to look outside of California. I mean, I'm born and raised here. Our family has beautiful land in California. I love everything about the state, but the policies and the leaders that are running it, I mean, they are putting us at a disadvantage. So I think we've got to figure out, like, you know, where are the regions in the world that want farmers with our skill set to come and help them develop their own ag sectors? And they're out there.
Thanks for listening to this week's Voices of the Valley. Today's episode was produced by Michelle Rivera. We'd like to thank Stuart Wolf for joining us and sharing his almond expertise. We got lucky. He is usually one tough nut to crack. Okay, enough of the almond puns. In our next episode of Voices of the Valley, we will be joined by Western Growers Assurance Trust, Raquel Lugo, Senior Director of Client Services and Mexico Operation, to talk about field worker health care south of the border. Make sure you tune in each week and join us as we explore more about farming and our food system with some of the most well-respected experts in the industry. If you enjoyed our podcast today, be sure to follow us on X, leave a comment, and let us know your thoughts. We'll be selecting a few lucky recipients to receive a coveted Western Growers branded Stanley mug. You can find us at our handle, @WesternGrowers. And don't forget to like and subscribe so you don't miss any of our future episodes. That does it for this episode of Voices of the Valley. I'm Corey Lundy, signing off. Thanks for tuning in to Voices of the Valley, a Western Growers production, produced by Corey Lundy, Ann Donahue, Michelle Rivera, Kara Timmons, and Julia Nellis. As always, we'd like to give a special shout out to our guest for joining us. Don't forget to like and subscribe to catch our future episodes, and we invite you to follow us on social media to continue the conversation.